This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lin Mark and Wang Shanning. It's 8:36 a.m. Wednesday, the 22nd of April. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Catherine Birch, Senior Economist at ANZ Research, on how the COVID-19 virus has impacted Australia. Now, we're also running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you, are you concerned that foreign workers could become a source of new infections in Malaysia? We've had 230 votes, 78% have said yes. Do continue to let us know what you think. We're looking at the results of that in about half an hour. But right now, let's take a look at the markets.
Well, Asian markets took its cue from the US markets, which all closed down last night. So the Dow closed down 2.7%. S&P 500 was down 3%, while Nasdaq was down 3.5%. And if we look at markets which are open at this current moment, the Nikkei 225 is actually down 1.74%. Kospi is down 1.4% also. And the S&P in Australia is down 1.85%. So not a very good day in this region at this moment.
Doesn't look like it at all. So this morning, for some more insights on the markets, we have on the line with us Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. So crude prices have rebounded above zero after trading earlier in negative territory. Is the worst over for now?
It's a little hard to say, to be honest, because there's been general carnage on the whole futures curve. So the futures are actually run in monthly delivery. So, yes, the May one, which was set to expire, did rally back above 0%. But we saw the June, which is now the spot contract, falling by, I think, around, depending on who you speak to, because that seems to be quite difficult to ascertain, around 25% overnight. So it fell to around about $11 a barrel. It's since rallied this morning by about $2.50, which is equivalent to about 25%. So if you're looking for volatility, oil markets have it in spades. There's definitely a lot of pressure on the curve, though, and we're still seeing Brent crude also falling massively last night as well. And actually, a lot of the grades of oil, such as Alaskan oil, are still trading at negative prices in the continental United States in the physical delivery market. So I don't think we're out of the woods here. I think this is the approaching of a day of reckoning for high-cost producers.
And Jeffrey, you know, Japan has been going through a rough patch, obviously. So March exports slumped to a near four-year low. They've also expanded their 1 trillion yen stimulus package. Now, what is the downside risk for Japan? How much worse can things get for the land of the rising sun?
Well, I think for Japan, it's really about how they manage this COVID-19 outbreak. There's been a bit of disquiet within the population in general in Japan about the government's handling of it. They've been extremely reluctant to declare emergencies, etc. That may have had something to do with stubbornly expecting that the Olympics would occur in Japan this year. That's now the pressure's off on that front. That's been postponed. So I think if they manage to get on top of this COVID-19 outbreak, which they should have done much sooner but haven't, then we can see Japan gently recover and that stimulus package having some meaningful effect. If they end up being in an extended shutdown like the rest of the world, then I would expect growth to continue slowing and we'll probably have to see more stimulus from the government to offset that. Around the region, a lot of this will also depend on the recovery of ASEAN as a region as well, because quite clearly Japan's fortunes are tied to the health of ASEAN in general as well as Northern Asia, sort of China and South Korea.
And speaking of other parts of Asia, yesterday the Hong Kong government also sold 200 million Hong Kong dollars in order to defend the peg. So what's your outlook then for Asian currencies?
Yeah, I think, I remember the Asian crisis and going short the Hong Kong dollars in 1998, thinking the peg would break. It went horribly wrong, that trade, and it didn't have a good ending for me. I think people have been doing it for the last 20 years and failing. And I think that'll be the same result this time. I think it's so unlikely that the Hong Kong peg will go. As far as the rest of Asia goes, it really depends again on the rebound in economic growth, because Asia itself is a large exporting region. It's the factory of the world. If the US dollar continues to strengthen, Asian currencies will logically start to weaken. But I think it's really going to be tied intrinsically to the recovery in Europe and the United States. So if we see them getting past peak virus quickly, then that will be very positive for Asian currencies. If it's loitering around and growth stays low in those two regions, the outlook for Asian currencies is probably going to be weaker. So in a nutshell, Asian currencies' fate is not in its own hands.
And then if we look at Asian markets, right, they've kind of fallen due to U.S. market declines and lingering uncertainty over global demand. Now, do you see investors reverting to a risk-off mode at this current juncture, Jeffrey?
I think there's a lot of noise day to day, because if we looked at last week, everybody, you couldn't buy enough stocks. Here we are 2 days later, you can't sell enough stocks. I think it's very important not to keep to get caught up in the sort of daily flip-flop of noise. I must say I was extremely surprised at the extent of the equity market recovery over the last couple of weeks. And I would say that having recovered half of the actual initial sell-off, some caution is probably warranted here. I don't think we're past peak virus, and I don't think the world's completely factored in yet the slowdown that we're faced with. So my feeling is that being excessively bullish on a V-shaped recovery is a very dangerous strategy indeed with regards to equities at the moment.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Halley, a senior market analyst at Oanda, with a little bit of a cautionary note there at the end. But this morning, if we take a look at some other international headlines, Netflix has been in the news because they added a record 15.8 million paid subscribers during this first quarter, actually more than doubling their own forecast of 7 million and also almost doubling the 8.5 million forecast by Wall Street analysts. Now, that sounds great, but the question is, though, how long is this going to last? Netflix have said that they expect 7.5 million new subscribers in the second quarter, and under normal circumstances, that would be a great quarter, but investors seem to have wanted more.
Meanwhile, Netflix shares closed at around $434 after initially soaring as much as 12% in aftermarket trading, but soon came back to earth. I think when the reality set in is that COVID-19 will have devastating effects to the global economy. So even video streaming services like Netflix, yes, they have found themselves with a captive audience. The new Disney Plus service also has surpassed 50 million subscribers in just 5 months, a faster pace than predicted. But will this translate to actual earnings is always the question mark, right? So yes, you've increased your subscriber growth, but are you going to make a nice profit? And I'm also very curious, with this social distancing going on, will there be any new shows? How do you make shows?
One assumes they have some kind of a pipeline in place, right? And then the thing that Netflix does very well is that they pull TV series from around the world and consolidate it onto a single platform. That's why you get things from Korea, you have things from Belgium, Germany, Japan. But this has been an outlier couple of quarters. So you wonder how well they're going to be able to sustain this growth, and whether or not, you know, next year's numbers will suffer from this high base effect.
Yeah, I am curious, like, you know, will we then end up just watching cartoons in the future? Because, you know, you just need a person to do the animation, right? You don't need, like, people in the studio, you know, making movies.
Yeah, physically present.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and we're going to be heading into some messages now. And then after that, we're going to be speaking with Catherine Birch, Senior Economist at ANZ Research, on how the COVID-19 has impacted Australia. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.